Small business owners, school district representatives, and charitable causes, Speak Out is here for you on KNTR Talk. It's time to introduce you to the host of Speak Out. When legendary drummer Keith Moon was MIA, who did the Who turn to?
Yo, Paulie!
When the great Pele asked for a sub, who did his World Cup team turn to?
Yo, Paulie!
Now this world-renowned musician slash athlete has settled behind the microphone once again for your benefit. Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only, I mean, could you imagine a twin? Paul Lavoie!
All right, welcome to Speak Out. It is Wednesday, August 12th, 2026. I am Paul Lavoie, and wow, what a show we have today. And I'm not even exaggerating on this one. Former Arizona Governor Jan Brewer is my first guest, believe it or not. And Governor Brewer, welcome to the show. You are the executive board chair for Right Count Arizona.
Thank you so much, Paul. What a wonderful introduction. I'm so honored to be on the show today. It's a pleasure to be with you.
No, the honor is all mine, trust me. But as long as you don't point your finger at me, all right, I'm good. That is such.
Well, I'll behave.
That is.
You behave.
I will.
You behave, and you won't get the finger.
Now we call it the finger. That's funny.
There's
a couple different meanings for that, by the way. But yours was the index finger. You know, I want to go back to that moment. I know it's funny, and people make light. And you know, on Saturday Night Live for probably a couple of weekend update episodes, I would imagine. But what led to all that? Rerun that for those people who weren't very political back then and didn't know what happened between you and President Obama.
Well, it's an interesting story because here we were sitting in Arizona and President Obama wasn't really listening to me and my pleas to secure our border. And I just kept calling and writing letters and going back there. And he was coming into town and he landed over in the East Valley. And I went to greet him. And before I left, I sat at my desk by myself and I wrote a letter, handwritten. And I walked out to get in my car, and I thought, I got to photocopy it. So I photocopied the letter. I went out, and I got in the car. He comes down the plane, and I start talking to him. And I said, Mr. President, I would like to give you this letter I wrote. I don't want you to refuse and not take it if I hand it to you. And he said, no, he would take it. So I handed it to him. And then I started talking to him about securing our border. And he wouldn't listen to me, and I somewhat talked with my hands, and that's how the picture got taken, because he wasn't listening to me, and I wanted his attention. But I got a funny story behind that, is that when we got through and it was all done, and I was getting back into my car, my son calls me, who's a lawyer here in Arizona in Phoenix, and he says, what have you done? He said, you were all over the news. I said, oh, why? He said, you were all over the news. You wagged your finger or something. And he said, I don't know. And so I said, I don't know. And so he called me back and he says, you wagged your finger on him on the airplane. I said, well, he wasn't listening to me. I said, he wouldn't listen to me. And so about 2 weeks later, the press was getting a hold of my Michael for whatever reason. They said, well, what did you think about your mother and the President of the United States with the finger wagged? He says, well, I never, ever thought that President Obama and I would have anything in common, but we both have been at the other end of that finger. I said, all right, Michael, all right. You know, you humanized it.
That's very funny. That is hilarious. I mean, I can imagine that now he probably, does he have children?
No, he doesn't.
Oh, okay. Well, I can imagine that you have other family members that's a trait,
of course.
Right?
Right, exactly. You know, there's people. I talk with my hands. I just do.
Sure. All right, I get it.
Yeah.
So let's get to Right Count Arizona. And
yes.
What does the organization do? What is Right Count Arizona?
Well, Right Count of Arizona is a conglomeration of all the states together. So we have a Right Count organization in each state. And I happen to be the state chair for Arizona, and we dedicate ourselves and our energy to building the public confidence in our elections through education and transparency and upholding the rule of law. There's been so much critical and bad information going out about our elections, that we're out there to try to educate the public and assure them that their votes do count, and that there's so many strong protocols protecting their votes and procedures that they can be absolutely confident that in Arizona that their vote counts and it's counted correctly.
I can vouch for that. 4 years ago, we had the school board candidate who won. I'm not talking about 500 votes or anything, but no. I'm talking about a total of about 3,000 cast. She won by one vote.
Yep.
She held her seat by one vote. But does it trouble you when Adrian Fontes, who's now the Secretary of State, who you used to be Secretary of State in Arizona, does it trouble you when he goes around the state touting mail-in ballots? Or is that just another form of voting that you're okay with?
I'm good. I'm good with mail-in ballots because I understand the protocols and how they're handled. I think everyone should feel secure. When I was in the legislature, I didn't support mail-in ballots because I didn't know enough about it. But having been the state election officer, now I understand the procedures. Having, you know, served as a county board of supervisors with the county elections department, then going to supervisors and writing the election procedures manual that educates everybody out there in all the counties. I understand the barriers and the rules and the procedures. I mean, they're down. They are tight. They are absolutely tight. And the amazing people that work in elections is just unbelievable. They are so dedicated. And to see them verbally abused, in my opinion, to what they're doing is just shameful. But no, if you go down to any election office at any county and you go through there, and they'd be more than happy to have anybody do it, and you go through the procedures with them and you see their security, you would walk out of there thinking, I don't have to worry about my vote being counted. There's hiccups. There's always hiccups, but not anything that's going to change the election.
Yeah, I don't worry too much about the security. It's when I'm standing in line on election day. I make it a point to tell my listeners that I vote on election day. And somebody walks their ballot in that's sealed in an envelope, and they put it in the same hopper, and then it's separated. But that's what holds up our elections, is the people that drop off those mail-in ballots on election day. I think that should be something that, why can't they just open them and put them in? I think there's a ballot question for this also.
I think they're going to do that this year.
Right. I think it's question 144, if I remember right.
They're already doing that,
Oh, they are?
Yeah.
Okay.
You just take it in, you take it out of the envelope, and it's tabulated right there.
So I understand we had a weather alert come over during your maybe a couple minutes ago when you were answering a question. I want to remind people that you can go to the archive if they missed anything on the show. It's at kntrtalk.com, and just look for Speak Out. But I'm not sure where you were or what you were answering, but we're talking about elections, folks, and how to keep them secure, especially in Arizona. And, you know, it leads me to believe that or think about when President Trump, like, let's say he talks about Georgia, the elections there, that, you know, there's all this fraud going on, it's the most fraud ever, and this and that and the other thing. Does that trouble you when you're trying to get a different message out?
Well, it does trouble me, but I don't know exactly how Georgia runs their elections either. I mean, I'm not hands-on back there. I haven't ever examined anything back there, so it's hard for me to be judgmental. But I know that the county recorders, they have an organization. They all come together. They talk. They organize. They talk about how they can make elections safer and better and faster and for the accuracy. And these people are really, I mean, these are your neighbors. These are people that your kids go to school with, their kids, you know, they go to church with you. I mean, they're not out there. And, you know, you got Democrats and Republicans, and you've got the public invited to come, and they can watch the election procedure. I mean, they can witness it all.
Okay, tell me about the rest of your board. I see a name that's very familiar to the people in Mojave County, and he also ran for governor. Matt Salmon is on that board as well. Matt's a good friend of the show, by the way.
Oh, good.
Who
Better than me?
I don't know about that. Not now, but Matt has called in a few times.
He's a great guy. We served in the legislature together, so we've known him forever. And when he ran for governor, I was running for secretary of state. So we go way back. And now we get to serve again on Wright County. So that's really great.
Who are some of the other people on that board that you'd like to mention that bring such a sparkle or a highlight to Wright County, Arizona?
Well, there's a lot of them, you know. It's just really important people in the valley and throughout the county that support going out and talking reasonably to people to get them assured that they can be assured that the vote does count.
What would you consider your legacy as governor or maybe as secretary of state or even as a legislator in Arizona?
Oh, gosh, my legacy. That's interesting.
You've never thought about that?
I haven't really. That's interesting. I've served in office for so long. I ran the first time in 1982, took office in 83, so I served 14 years in the legislature, House and Senate, with Majority Whip, Board of Supervisors of Maricopa County, the fourth largest county in the country, was chair, then went to Secretary of State and served there 6 years, and went to governor and served for 6 years, and overwhelmingly won. I think I hold the record for 24 in all elections to the state of Arizona. So my legacy, I think, is that I'm somebody that got involved because of education for my children. And I never realized I was going to stay in there for very long, but I was so adamant about making changes and representing the people of my district and my state that it just seems like I moved from one place to another, and usually always because of a reason. I served in the legislature and moved to the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors because Maricopa was going bankrupt, and our county supervisor, who was a friend of mine, just wasn't doing his job. I didn't think we had long discussions, and I ran against the incumbent, and I beat him because I thought I could do a better job, and I think I did. And then I left there and decided I was going to kind of get out of politics, and decided I would love to be Secretary of State. Mm-hmm. At that time, the Secretary of State's office wasn't very active. But when I ran and I won, I thought I could just be the goodwill ambassador like Rose Mofford, you know, just be fabulous. And I got up there, and then the Help America Vote Act, HAVA, got pushed on us by Congress, and I had to implement all of the voting stuff. And that's when we came in and had to do all the election, the electoral processes, you know, all of it. We had to do it and send it out to the counties, and everybody had to agree. It was so time-consuming. But we were very, very successful. And then when Janet went. So I think I've got longevity. I went to the governor's office and served. And, Janet left for the Obama administration. I went there, and then I ran for re-election. Won overwhelmingly again in my own right, and served there during the most difficult time of Arizona. So I think my legacy is ending up in certain areas of government throughout the state where things are really bad, and hopefully when I left, they were better.
Well, see, that you could put that in your book and then dedicate a portion of it to me there, just for, for thinking of it.
Yes, absolutely. No. My brother's name is Paul, by the way.
Oh, very good. Very good. Thank you. You mentioned an interesting point that you became governor after Janet Napolitano went to Washington. I think she was the DHS secretary under Obama, if I remember right, and the first to be thrown under the bus when everything hit the fan. But now it's going to be different because the voters approved a referendum to elect a lieutenant governor. So this year, each candidate is choosing a lieutenant governor. And I brought up an interesting point to Andy Biggs that the lieutenant governor in Nevada is like the ambassador to the film office, okay? If you want to make a film in Nevada, you go through the lieutenant governor's office.
Right.
But what will it be in Arizona? I think the next governor will have a chance to shape that office. Have you thought about that?
Yeah, I have. When I was in the legislature, I introduced the lieutenant governor bill about 8 times. I finally got it through the legislature and through the ballot one time. It was overwhelmingly voted down by the people of Arizona because we had so many governors that left for whatever reasons, you know, and then the Secretary of State was going up there. And then the policy, the philosophy would change. And I thought it was a grand idea, so I'm all in for lieutenant governor. And I just wonder, you know, how it's going to work out. But now we know they kick their lieutenant governor, and they get to decide what office they do hold or how they're going to operate. Right. So it'll be interesting. But at least we know that if something, God forbid, should happen to your sitting governor, that it's somebody of the same philosophy that you brought with you, that the voters brought with you. And we're growing. You know, the state's growing. There's plenty to do out there.
Yeah,
plenty
of
work.
That's a huge difference with Nevada because the lieutenant governor of Nevada is a separate elected office on its own. So the governor...
Oh, okay. That's where it is in a lot of states.
Right, right, right. I'm going to go ahead and we'll take a short break. And somehow I figured you really like Patsy Cline. And how about a little Walking After Midnight? How's that sound?
Oh, that sounds great.
All right. Former Arizona Governor Jan Brewer, my guest. She is the executive board chair for Right Count Arizona. We're going to tell you how to get to that website. There's a lot of states that it's not just Right Count Arizona. There's Right Count Nevada and other states like that. So we'll tell you about that. And then we have Director James Scheller coming on the program by phone. He's going to call in around the bottom of the hour. And we're going to talk about the Laughlin Bullhead International Airport and what's going on with the county, the airport, Director Scheller, all of that. When we come back on Speak Out, you can text us 928-727-5566 if you have a question for Governor Brewer. 928-727-5566. Stay with us on Speak Out. I love that song. Little Willie Nelson and Family Live, Whiskey River. You like Whiskey River. Everybody loves that song.
Yeah, of course. And Willie.
have you seen Willie? Have you met Willie?
Yes.
Any Willie stories that we can tell on the air?
he's lots of fun, but I have met him, and I've got a couple times with pictures with him, and always enjoyed him immensely. And he loves Arizona.
Oh, I bet, but
and he's still performing.
He is?
Yeah, so he was at the Celebrity Theater, I think, about 2 years ago, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. I know he's probably about 94 by now, so.
Well, he was in his bus, and he was there. I was there. I mean, I was front row with seats.
Well, of course you were. You were governor. All right.
I was the governor, but yeah.
Former Arizona Governor Jan Brewer, my guest, and Speak Out brought to you in part by Mojave Mortgage, also Mojave Electric Cooperative, Bradley Chevrolet and Bradley Ford, by TWN Fiber Internet, Salmon's Air Conditioning, by Western Arizona Regional Medical Center in Bullhead City, and by Booby Falls Restaurant and Rodeo, Main Street, Havasu. And I want to talk about when you were Secretary of State. I almost said Lieutenant Governor when you were Secretary of State. The Secretary of State is responsible for something called the Voting Handbook, I believe it's called. And I think the last one went out under Katie Hobbs when she was Secretary of State, but nothing under Adrian Fontes. That was like 2019 was the last one. Are there differences between the one we're operating under now as to when you were Secretary of State?
I would assume so, because what it is, it's the Electoral Procedures Manual that goes out to all the county recorders and election officers, and it's drafted and put together as the laws change and what you think are the right things to do with the recorders. And it gets in a book, and then everybody has to follow all those procedures and their laws and those rules. But as the legislature goes through, they change laws, and so that has to be updated. But collectively, the recorders and the election officers, they make changes, too. They don't need legislation laws. So it's very, very important, very important. And you can be guaranteed that it's tight. It's really tight.
Mm-hmm. I understand, when Janet Napolitano went to Washington, you know, she served in a cabinet post. Have you ever been asked to do that, be in a cabinet?
I was asked if I wanted to be, and there was a little bit of discussion over the years, but I chose. I'm not interested in going to Washington, D.C. I had a family here. I love my state. I just didn't want to move, I just didn't want to do that, period, but No, but I know lots of people, young people would love to do that, and what a great experience. But being governor or elected secretary of state, you're back and forth from Washington all the time. And, of course, I did a lot of media hits and stuff, so that was before Zoom and COVID, you know, so mm-hmm. I was flying back and forth constantly, even when I've been out of office. So I get enough of D.C. I had enough of D.C.
A lot of people have. You have somebody on the Board of Supervisors there in Maricopa County, Debbie Lesko, who had enough of D.C.
Uh-huh. Yep, she came home.
I thought Debbie might be, I thought she might run for governor, but I was wrong.
Yeah, I thought she might too, and I was wrong when she called me up and said she's going to run for the Board of Supervisors. I said, you're kidding me. She says, nope, that's what I want to do. And I said, well, it's hands on, you're going to love it.
Well, there is that.
And she's done a good job. She's done a good job.
Well, that's good to hear. I understand you have family in Havasu?
I do. I have a cousin that I grew up with in California, and she lived in L.A. and moved there about maybe 20, 30 years ago. Mavis Choir, I'll give her a big shout-out, is my cousin, my first cousin, and we grew up together. Our mothers were sisters. So, yes, I love her dearly. She's a great citizen for You're lucky to have her.
Well, when you get to Havasu to visit Mavis, you need to stop by the station and come see us.
I will do that, and I'll bring her with me.
Oh, perfect. We're right there across from Wheeler Park in downtown Havasu on McCulloch. So
super.
We want to tell everybody about the website. What is it, rightcount.org? Is that it?
Yes.
And what can is that an organization that you can make a donation to then?
You know, I assume that you can. I don't know. It's an interesting one. But it would be important that if they do accept donations, which I'm sure that they do, then mm-hmm. people send them their money because they're out there protecting and getting the message out there about how our elections are ran and to assure the people that their vote counts. That's the deal.
How often does your board meet?
Oh, you know, we do it a lot online, you know, it's not a set date time. We just kind of get together when necessary.
You should get the former Wisconsin governor. I can't remember his name right
off. Walker.
Thank you. Yes, of course.
He's my buddy too, and he's got Arizona connections. He's got relatives here in Arizona.
He's been a guest on this show.
Oh, he's a great guy.
Yes, because he's the CEO of the Americas Foundation. So.
Oh, I didn't know that. I did not know that.
Yeah, they're responsible for the upkeep of the Reagan Ranch and all of that, you know, in Simi Valley. So I want to thank you for being on the show. I got my next guest trying to get a hold of us. So, Jan Brewer, former governor of Arizona, don't be a stranger. I wish you could run. Let's put it that way.
I think you could
reach out to enough of the voting base for everyone and, you know, pick off an incumbent governor. I would really like that, in fact, if you did.
Oh, that's so complimentary. And my legacy, I think, is being a truth teller.
Is being a truth teller?
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
There you go.
That's
okay.
Great. Governor Jan Brewer, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to play a little On the Road again as we play her off. And James Scheller, if you're listening, go ahead and call. The line is clear, 928-854-5687. And we'll have James Scheller coming up next. He is the director of the Laughlin Bullhead International Airport. And a lot of happenings yesterday with a special meeting of the Board of Supervisors. We're going to let him tell his side of the story when we come back. Stay with us on Speak Out.
I had a love undying. I didn't keep it, wasn't trying.
All right, welcome back to Speak Out. We have Director James Scheller on the line from Laughlin Bullhead International Airport. First, I need to tell you that Speak Out is brought to you in part by The Chair, also Mojave College, Solar Power by Esme Electric, by Doritos Place, Legacy Rehab and Care in Bullhead City, and A&B Propane, online at abpropaneaz.com. And Boy, they need to make those commercial breaks a little longer, Director Scheller. But it's okay. We got to hold you in. And, yeah, no producer needed in this house, I'll tell you. But anyway, the special meeting yesterday yielded a board resolution that had 19 different items on them. Is there any – I want to highlight a couple before I go to you. And you can get – you know, we don't have a lot of time, but we have enough time, I think. So – it's for the year ending June 30th, 2025. That was the last fiscal year. The Mojave County Airport Authority had an operating loss of $563,400. That's unaudited, and a revenue of $3.7 million. And for the year ending this year, June 30th, the authority had an operating loss of $664,000 unaudited, and on revenue of $4.9 million. Were those... I don't know. I didn't watch the meeting, but was this all an executive session, or was it a public meeting?
It was. I guess they were executive session, and then it went to a public meeting. And I was in the meeting myself during the time, and with all these line items that you see, I thought the meeting would go on for a couple of hours. But I had some staff come in and say the meeting was over and done. They went down three items, and that was it.
Oh,
so it leaves me. The question, does the county want to meet and confer and talk about all these items so perhaps we can resolve these issues before it gets spun out of control? Because looking at all of these issues that they have, I have explained in to total exhaustion sometimes what has happened since my arrival here May 2023.
Okay, let's talk about that. Yeah. Go ahead and give us the, I wouldn't say elevator speech version, but the a little shorter version, you know, for radio, since we have about maybe 20 minutes.
Sure. Well, the when I arrived here, the COVID grant money was, that whole grant was ending. So this airport then needed to make a big decision to run its own business and generate its own revenue. And there was a lot of areas that we could capture revenue, which I implemented those. But the first thing I noticed is that the audits for the past 16 years were basically bogus audits, and information that was being delivered to CPAs was not correct information. And
What do you mean it wasn't correct?
It was for example, accounts receivable. According to the former CPA that we had two CPAs ago, he said he was not receiving accounts receivable information that he was requesting. So the finance manager was authorized by the board since November 2020 to work from home remotely in Memphis, Tennessee, which left nobody here in the office to actually have hands-on control other than the airport director.
So there was little oversight is what you're saying.
Very little. And the airport director's involvement at the time with the finances was could be contested as a violation of the grant assurances, number 13 and 25, because the airport director is not supposed to have access to QuickBooks or any type of accounting software. The airport director is supposed to use reports, supposed to look over the shoulder of the finance manager. There has to be independence established with the within the airport.
Okay.
So receiving the fiscal year 2023 audit, the board of directors that I was involved with, the finance committee, noticed that there was many discrepancies with those audits, and then even going back 16 years. And so our mission at that point, me and the finance committee at the time, was to reestablish the finance protocols here. One is credit cards. You had employees under the old directors, MCA directors, allowing employees to go around with credit cards and just spend money without, a PO system.
So no petty cash, just credit cards.
It was it was petty cash.
Yeah.
But the accounting for it, like purchase orders and everything, that was established under my watch here using the board's approval and also implementing you know, having employees of the airport and also hiring a new finance manager actually implement those changes. Then it was a challenge of finding a CPA who knew airport finance, because the offgoing CPA said he just threw up his arms and says, I know nothing about airport finance. So that we went searching for another one. And the next CPA showed up, and he said he could handle all of our finances. And then he wanted me to train him in airport finance. I said, I don't have time for that. We're already behind on getting our FY 2024 audit completed.
Right.
On the way. So, and it's been this, you know, relationship that the county or the Mojave County Airport Authority has had with their CPA. And I'll be honest, these CPAs in this area, there needs to be a vaccination shot for tax season for all CPAs, because they all get sick. They all have, you know, families, their life hits them.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go to these sole accountants that just run their own little small business, you're at the mercy of their schedule. And so these delays, just because life hits them, now affects us in fulfilling, you know, the agreement that we have between the county and the Mojave County Airport Authority, which in the agreement, the county is only entitled to audited finances. This delivery of unaudited finances is kind of like the problem, as you can see with these resolutions. Hmm. Why are they putting unaudited finances on here when they're not entitled to them at all?
I see.
So when I arrived here, the airport authority was not publishing online their finances. I established where we would get quarterly audited compilations and publish them online. And now our last CPA decided to write a letter, a defaming letter against me and the former airport finance manager, which was done totally in a non-compliance with the AICPA, which now there's an AICPA investigation regarding that letter because of what was said in that letter was, you know, fabricated, untrue. But according to the forensic auditor, the tax situation of the Mojave County Airport Authority is something that we all looked at. And a lot of news says that this airport authority was established in 1974.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Mojave County Airport Authority was reincorporated in 1991. And with that came new bylaws. And those bylaws had a membership in there. So you have Mojave County Airport Authority general members. And then the membership, they elect who's on the board, so it's all volunteers and people with an interest in the airport. And you have that the bylaws became three states, not just Mojave County. You have Clark County, you have Mojave County, you have Needles, California, that are in our bylaws.
Okay.
So this, so it changed everything. And this is done under Don Laughlin's watch and Herb Hess, who runs Laughlin Helicopter Tours.
Sure.
You're very familiar with this. So during 1987 through 1991, the old airport was being decommissioned and moved up the hill here, we will say. And when the old airport was decommissioned and to even establish this one, Don Laughlin had to come out of his pocket, out of his corporate pocket, $20 million to purchase 466 acres of property donated to the county and then pay another $6 million. Part of that 20 is $6 million just for the drainage so they could even install the 7,400-foot runway. And in 1991, there were two airports. You had Kingman Airport and the Laughlin Bullhead International Airport, say, under that Mojave County Airport Authority. In 1992, the Mojave County Airport Authority, not the County of Mojave, Mojave County Airport Authority sold the Kingman Airport to the Kingman Airport Authority.
Okay.
Kingman Airport Authority had a lease agreement with the city of Kingman. And in about 2015, 2016, the tenants of the Kingman Airport did a Part 16 complaint to the FAA, which is a formal complaint, and the response time is within 30 days. So during the formal complaint, the FAA discovered that there was non-compliance issues, commingling of funds, I know, property issues, operations and maintenance of the airport, and the FAA gave the Kingman Airport Authority a corrective action plan. However, the city of Kingman decided, since they're out of compliance with the FAA, they're in default of their lease agreement, we're going to condemn them. And $500,000 later, the Kingman Airport Authority decided, okay, we'll just hang it up and turn it over. But that was done under a formal complaint. With the Laughlin Bullhead International Airport, there is no formal complaint. We just had our Part 139 inspection, which is the certificate inspection to have commercial service here.
Okay.
And then, so when the Kingman Airport Authority was condemned April 5th, 2018, 1 year later, they lost their 139 certificate because it was too expensive to pay for the fire department, from what I understand.
Okay.
So their commercial shit went away after condemnation. So if the county is saying, well, we did it to Kingman, we can do it to IFP, Laughlin Bullhead, just follow the trend. Now, these casinos are the big reason why this airport is self-sustaining, because they deliver more than 10,000 passengers a year. And because they do that, this airport receives an entitlement grant from the FAA of $1.3 million for infrastructure. Without those casinos, this airport would stand to be would only receive a $150,000 entitlement grant. That's a significant difference, and it's not sustainable for this airport and the size of the pavement. It is a very large airport. Right now, it's considered a general aviation airport,
mm-hmm.
and we are responsible for 5% of the share of each grant we received.
Okay.
There's some exceptions in there.
Director Scheller, yeah. Again, we're talking to Director James Scheller from Laughlin Bullhead International Airport. And you can text your questions to 928-727-5566. But I really want to talk about item number six on this resolution, about the $700,000 loan that was applied for with Titan Fuels. Number one, why was it applied for with that company? And number two, did you have to get any approvals? Because it says you did, but I'm not sure. I want to hear your side of the story. Why the loan for $700,000?
Okay, so it says in there Title 28 and a violation. So if anybody's mm-hmm. done a research, you look up Title 28, it's transportation. So I don't know. There's a lot of transportation in there, and also in the Title 28, there's airports that are in there. So. But let's just stick to the Arizona purchase policy or procurement policies that they have.
Okay.
In the Arizona procurement policy, it does say that you can go to a sole vendor if that vendor is the only one that can provide that service, the only one that can provide, you know, the service or the product. So in our case, we do not have the Mojave County Airport Authority. If everything was tracking right in line with the industry, we would have had our FY 2025 audit delivered in February of this year. But because there's a forensic audit in place, the FY 2025 audit is delayed till the forensic audit is done.
I see.
So I've reached out to, since January of this year, I've reached out to a P3, Sustainable Partners. I reached out to traditional lending companies, you know, Bank of Arizona, National Bank of Arizona, Wells Fargo, even reached out to a couple other banks that deal specifically with aviation. And they said, well, if you don't have your audits, we can't help you. Even trying to get a bond, we can't help you.
Mm-hmm.
On February 26th of this year, I had a meeting. It was a great meeting, too, I would say. Supervisors Lingenfelter, Supervisor Lettman, Will Davis, county attorney, some of his interns. We also had the city officials here. We had, you know, assistant city manager. We had the city finance person here. It was a good meeting.
Okay.
And we sat and had a great conversation about the fuel farm. Even took him out there for a visit. And while we were out there visiting in the fuel farm, the supervisors, along with our directors, were talking about getting a bond and saying, hey, James, we can possibly get you a bond. Great. So now a couple months go by. I'm waiting for some more communication about the bond possibility with the county, you know, co-sponsoring it. But nothing came to fruition. So we had a finance committee meeting in March. Mm-hmm. And then we I talked about the loan, and we have to keep the fuel farm project going because people don't understand that fuel farm was never supposed to be installed to begin with. Those two horizontal tanks were below ground tanks, and now they're above ground tanks. Oh, it's boy. Not supposed to happen, and not even grandfathered in. Mm-hmm. And the vertical 25,000-gallon fuel tank was an old grain silo. And those were installed in 2002. So here we are in a position where I cannot get a loan or a bond because of outstanding finances or audits. However, Titan Fuels, their agreement, page 2, section 3, states that Titan Fuels will provide financing for the new fuel farm and a $150,000 grant without any, just as, good faith gesture that they would just give us.
Sure.
So the $150,000 is not any type of loan. They just gave us that money so we could put towards the new fuel farm, in which we've already replaced the computer, and we've also did some payoffs for the fuel farm. So Titan Fuels was the only option to secure the deposit to keep the fuel farm moving forward. And our insurance provider sent me a letter this week that said, James, great conversation we had. I'm glad you told me that you have the deposit. You're moving forward with the fuel farm. Until the fuel farm is replaced, you cannot get a pollution policy for it. So there's an so on March 13th of this year, an agenda item for the fuel farm replacement and to move forward with the funding, the board made a motion for the airport director to move forward with full construction and to secure funding for the fuel farm. It was voted 4-2. Now, the two county people voted against it, but there were four board members that voted for it, which left out the board president to do a tiebreaker. But the board president's like, well, congratulations, James. You got yourself a fuel farm. On July 8th, I announced to the board in our quarterly meeting, I secured a loan, a $700,000 loan for the deposit for the fuel farm through Titan Fuels. Nobody said anything. And then July 10th, there was an executive session concerning, matter of whether or not I'm going to stay or go. And that loan wasn't even brought up in the executive session. So now after the fact, after the executive session, and I'm still here, they decided on August 5th to make an issue over it because I didn't get board approval. But I obviously received board approval. I have it recorded. Obviously we record the minutes. And so now we have a loan which I have described as this is only the deposit for the fuel farm.
Okay.
And we are supposed to seek a traditional bond or a loan to actually do a master loan of this. So that's what was explained. So, yeah, go.
No, I'm sorry. I had to interrupt. We're coming up on about 3 minutes left. Is this situation with you remaining as director, you seem like a good operations guy. I mean, in my opinion anyway, that you know airport protocol. I don't know about the financial side. I know if it was me, there's no way I'd be in charge of a budget like that. Is this tenable with you as director if it does go to the supervisors and the county takes over and all of that? How is that going to work?
Well, that's a question that I think you just asked the entire their constituents. What is your plan for this?
Mm-hmm.
And the plan, I believe, because they've been touting this, is they signed a contract with a company called Capstone Aero. That company doesn't have a business license. They don't have a W-9. They don't have any insurance. you know, to do business. That's why I couldn't do business with them. But they spent $15,000 or $20,000 of taxpayer dollars trying to find somebody that will give them the answers they want. I want to work with the county. I want to have a ribbon count cutting ceremony out in front of that fuel farm when it's delivered next year. I mean, I'm not seeing adversarial opportunity here. I'm seeing an opportunity for us to work together and find out where we can actually put this airport on the map. There's a lot of land here that needs to be developed, and I need those supervisors to help me with legislation to put it here. We can get commercial service for our catchment area probably in the next year if I get the bill passed, because the airport consortium program with 13 airports in Arizona, we want a bill passed that like other states have to have a state-funded air service program. And this airport is the will be the poster child for developing that.
Okay. We need to revisit this issue as it is an ongoing deal with the county that's going on. And Supervisor Ron Gould will be my guest tomorrow on the show. District 5 County Supervisor, of course. James Scheller, I'd like to thank you so much for being available for today. And we will definitely revisit and keep us posted on what's going on, okay?
Yeah, come on out. We'll do a live session out here, too, if you want.
You know, it sounded like when your board had that meeting and everybody sang kumbaya afterward, like you were going to have a ribbon cutting then, you know, for the fuel farm. But just like you said, it didn't happen. So anyway, thank you for being on the show. We appreciate you.
All right. Have a good day.
All right. You too. All right. We're going to go straight to Hannity. Take it right up to the top. On this date in 1967, Fleetwood Mac made their stage debut at, I can't read that word. It's at a blues and jazz fest in England. Perfect. I don't know. Marissa June, I think it says the knot or something like that. I don't know. I can't read it. Anyway, we're going straight to Hannity. We're going to take a very short break first, and then, enjoy your day. News and a short break. Then, of course, Karate Man, Sean Hannity. Have a great day. Again, Ron Gould on the show tomorrow. We'll see you tomorrow on Speak Out.
This is KNTR Talk, KGJJ HD2 Laughlin. Heard on 106.7 FM, 106.5, and 106.3. The voice of the free.